You're listening to Radio Caravan with Scott Hayes and Robert Palmer and reporter Megan Jamerson.
All right, good morning, Laguna Beach. You're listening to KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. I'm Scott Hayes, and this is Radio Caravan. I'm here with my co-host, Robert Palmer.
Yo, yo, yo.
Yo, yo, yo. That's his new call. Who are you texting, by the way?
None of your damn business.
Okay, interesting. Robert, what's going on? How are you feeling this morning? Last week, you were just
the 13-year-old girl on Facebook. We're very close.
Yeah. How are you feeling today?
Good, really good.
You look good.
Perky.
You look perky, yeah.
I had lots of medicine yesterday. Feel good.
What do you mean medicine?
Tequila.
Ah, gotcha. Are you tequila? I thought you were like a scotch guy or something.
Late, I go scotch.
Early, you go tequila.
No, I go vodka early.
Tell me how that works.
Start off in a little easy vodka.
Okay. Just straight?
A little whisper or Red Bull, generally.
A whisper?
Whisper, and then you move in a little tequila for sipping.
Okay.
The tequila theme yesterday, we're at Javier's.
Nice, nice.
And then you slow down with a nice scotch at the end of the evening.
Really? Beautiful.
Really beautiful it was indeed.
Do you miss Javier's being down on Laguna Beach, by the way?
Javier's? I do.
Yeah.
I have to drive like 5 minutes now.
Yeah. I mean, it's a much more beautiful facility, no
but
doubt about
Carmelita's
it.
But Carmelita's is really kicking it. They have some wonderful food there.
They have great food there, yeah. And they have a great jalapeno margarita or something like that.
They do, and if you need some like 1040 motor oil, the Chevron's right there. So.
Nice, perfect.
Very convenient.
Hey, by the way, Radio Caravan airs 8 p.m. Saturdays, which is tonight, and 12 noon Sundays. Tonight and tomorrow, perhaps, is restaurateur David Wilhelm, Jimmy's Famous American Tavern in Dana Point. I know he was on last week. He may be on again tonight. And then tomorrow, it may be our good friend Henry Capono from the islands.
Yeah, I'm on.
Yeah, but, you know, he's not that island. But he's a real likable, wonderful, extraordinary singer-songwriter. And you just want to give him a big hug every time you see him. That show, of course, reaches potentially 250,000 cable subscribers in Orange County and Palos Verdes. I like the sound of that.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. It's like you don't really know who's watching, but then you don't really know who's listening either, or who's reading your publication, or who's visiting your website. I guess you can monitor websites sometimes with unique visitors. Depends on how people monitor that. But
NSA does that daily.
Here we go. Back. That's a whole story in and of itself. By the way, Megan Jamerson is in the studio. We haven't seen her for several weeks.
No, it was just 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks.
Round of applause.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
And this is Megan's last day on Radio Care. Last day on Radio Caravan.
It is. It's very bittersweet.
Yeah.
The situation tragique, as we say in French.
You're heading off to grad school in New York.
I am. So I'm flying out in 2 weeks. So I'm packing up and leaving you guys.
Wow.
And you're going to be missed.
You're going to be our New York correspondent.
Yeah,
in this New York
I'll call
minute,
in from
right?
time to time.
Can you do that?
Sure.
That'd be fun.
I don't see why I couldn't.
Yeah.
Local muggings.
Yeah, exactly. The crime report. I bet there's some good police blotter out there.
Very different than here. Very different police blotter.
Megan just got back from Mexico City, and you were telling me earlier that you were doing a pole vaulting event in the streets.
Yeah, they hosted what we call a street vault. So they, instead of it being at a track stadium, the meet organizers set up a runway and a pole vault pit in a park.
It's just not a way to rob a 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
That's an actual event.
Yeah. The more stuff you can carry over the pole with you, the better.
And what was that experience like?
It was a lot of fun just because people passing by stop and watch the event. Mm-hmm. And
what do they tend to say?
In Spanish.
What the?
I don't know. Not knowing the language very well, I don't know. But they
Is there lots of pointing and laughing?
More like cheering and clapping.
Amazement. Really?
And, yeah, cool. People were really excited. And, you know, we weren't jumping incredibly high, but they were excited for us. And there was a DJ playing, and they make it kind of like into a party.
Oh, wow.
Instead of a very serious track.
They take a street in San Francisco, and they actually cover it in snow, and they do ski jumping over it. And it's
right.
Like a
really?
Huge attraction. Yeah.
Oh.
So it sounds kind of like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's similar to that. Okay. So
was it fun for you to do it in that environment?
Yeah, it's always a lot of fun. It adds a different element that, you know, you do a sport to have fun.
Right.
It just sort of brings that back.
Did you adopt a cool name like Megalito? Or
yeah, Megalito.
Megatron. Or
Megatron's a good one. I like that.
And how high did you go this time? I mean, you, I know you weren't going for records, but...
Yeah, I jumped 13.10, so jeez, it wasn't my best, but it was just exciting to be there and sort of be a celebrity.
Yeah. And did you feel that way? Were people coming up to you? And
yeah, they're after the meet was done, people wanted photos and autographs. You're like, you're, wow, you don't know who I am, but that's cool.
Were you signing autographs, honestly?
Yeah, they wanted you to sign.
Wow, you're a celebrity.
Yeah, it was a bizarre experience, but it was a lot of fun.
What's the proper technique? Do you pose with the pole or do you pose without the pole?
Without the pole.
Without the pole. So
yeah, it's a little easier not to have contraption in the photo.
All right, beautiful. Well, listen, we're going to miss you, Meg, and there's no getting around it.
Oh, we're going to miss you guys, too.
Wow. Indeed. Thank you for all your wonderful work success and enjoying NYU in New York. You're just going to love it.
I'll be in touch.
That'd be great, yeah.
Your New York Minute.
We'll be watching her on TV one day. There's no doubt about it. Hey, Robert, I think it's time for your favorite or near your favorite police blotter.
Today's police blotter.
Sure, Laguna Beach. You think it's a paradise out there. What are you doing?
Sorry.
It's not a paradise.
Oh, okay.
It's a scum-filled hellhole.
Hey, I've never done it.
Crime is running rampant daily.
Wow.
Children beheaded in the streets. Ooh. Satan running
amok.
666 sprained. Painted on the Whole Foods store. It's terrible out there. But this week, not a lot happened.
666.
Pretty much my tip to anyone listening, and a good tip, especially if you're an out-of-towner, 9 out of 10 arrests were for DUI. Here in Laguna Beach, we take that very seriously, so please drive carefully.
What do you mean 9 out of 10, though? What's
that
mean?
The whole page is DUI. Had very few entries.
Oh, I see. 9 out of 10 items on the whole page were DUIs.
It's a very dull day on Police Blotter. So be very careful. Get a designated driver or call Uber, which is very popular.
Yeah, very, very good call. Yeah.
Speaking of Uber, the Uber hot Jill has just walked in.
Uber hot.
With her Uber healthy tips up to come soon. So I only have a few reportable moments. First, we have our whoopsie call here. This is Wednesday, July 16th, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Police got a call about someone blocking the street by parking their car sideways in the middle of the street.
Huh.
Shockingly, that wound up with a DUI.
Yeah.
Apparently, she had passed out trying to turn around and just said, F it.
Yeah.
And thought that was a good place to take a nap.
Well, you know what? Better that than her getting in an accident and causing somebody's injuries or death.
It was indeed. But our crack force was out Friday night at 2:45 in the morning. Shots were fired.
Really?
And the police showed up, and they found a very inebriated man, and next to him were a series of shell casings in his lap. He apparently had hidden the gun, claimed he didn't know where they came from.
But had the shell casings.
The police decided to let that one slide.
Hmm.
Pretty generous that night, I would think.
I would think so, yeah.
And our final tragic crime of the day was burglary. Computers were stolen in a break-in from a college. Now, here's some good detective work, and I'm quoting. Police believe the thieves entered through a window which was broken by a rock.
Good detective work.
I
love the word believe. They're not quite sure.
We found all this shit gone, pardon me.
Whoa.
I can say that. That's not one of the words.
Yes, it is.
Really? Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, we found all this stuff.
Good.
There's a giant rock in the middle of the room next to the missing computers.
Yeah.
There's a shattered window. Inspector Clouseau believes that the rock was the source of entry. How do you not know that to be the case?
Yeah, I agree with you on that point. Megan, when we podcast that, let's make sure we get around that one issue there. Huh? Are you texting again? Let me ask you.
Wait. I was reenacting the crime.
Yeah. I believe that was a broken window.
It is.
Is that it on the police blotter stuff?
I told you, it's a dull day.
I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. By the way, I want to give a shout-out to my brother-in-law, Mark, who's listening in Atlanta. Not Atlanta. I think it's Lilburn, Georgia. And he's a long-time listener. So,
yeah. Is he calling in today?
I don't know if he's calling in today. You know what's weird about the call-in, I think, is I think there's a 10-second delay. Now, when he calls in, he can hear it, like, live and on, you know. But when he's listening on the computer, there's like a 10-second delay, so it's hard.
Interesting.
Yeah, so nice shout-out to Mark. Thanks, Mark, for listening, buddy. Hey, what about town? Anything going on there?
There is.
Okay.
Now, your man about town.
All right, we got a big week coming up here.
Go.
Not particularly a great week.
Oh.
We got some stuff to talk about.
Okay.
Luc Besson's new movie's out. You may remember Luc from Taken. one of the greatest lines in the world. I don't have a lot of money. I don't have it, but I do have this particular set of skills, and I will find you, and I will kill you. Remember Luc Besson?
Well, who could forget?
Okay, so Luc has now done Lucy instead of Taken, and Lucy is the opposite of Taken. Lucy needs no one's help. Story about Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah.
The thesis is, what if you actually could use all of your brain?
As opposed to 7% of your brain.
Exactly. And Lucy does, and apparently takes over the world.
I'm curious what you think. What percent of your brain do you think you use?
6.
Really?
Right now, about 4.
Yeah.
And we have some other horrible movies opening. Hercules, okay. Of course, with The Rock.
Yeah.
That's got to be a classic, right?
How do you not love The Rock, though?
I love The Rock, but have you seen the Hercules previews?
No, I haven't.
Who are you? I am Hercules.
Oh, okay. It's just corny to the extreme.
It looks very corny. I'm a big Rock fan, though. And then the ever horrible Michael Douglas and Diane Keaton remaking
the 50th movie
the 50th time. And So It Goes. It's been panned by every critic who's seen it.
Yeah, but why the horrible Michael Douglas? He's done some extraordinary movies.
Now, your man of...
Why does that happen every time? And it's not your fault. It happens every time that little thing comes about.
She was just trying to shut you up.
I know, but why do you hate Michael Douglas? What's wrong with his work?
He's done a lot of bad work.
He's done a lot of great work, don't you think?
He has, in his early days, I believe.
Okay, interesting.
He has cancer, you know.
He does. Well, let's not go there, please.
We all know how we got that.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk some free stuff. Maybe that could be
look at Jill's wondering now, what's that all about?
Do you know that if you go on Wednesdays from noon to 3 and bring a donation, you can get into the fair for free?
Yes, I did know that.
It's very expensive, and you'll even get one coupon for one ride.
By the way, did you attempt to see Kenny Metcalf and Caleb Quay last weekend, yes?
I did.
And
every parking lot there was sold out. I drove around for 30 minutes.
That's a...
And finally said, au revoir, Elton John. So I did not get to see him. It was very sad.
Yeah, that's too bad. Yeah.
Luckily, we'd seen the pig races on Thursday, so that was the most important thing. If you haven't been, you got to go to the pig races.
They're fun.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
They're from Alaska. Okay, speaking of free, I did not know this.
Uh-oh.
Our show's over at 9 o'clock. Where are you going to be? You're going to zoom out to Armstrong Gardens. Because every Saturday at 9 o'clock, they have free classes. And this week is Love Your Succulent. Yes, I didn't make this up. And next week sounds even more pornographic. Next week is How to Attract a Pollinator.
They must do that on purpose.
I'm not making this up.
No, I know, I get it, but they must do it on purpose.
I've been hanging out with Keith Morrison too much. And then the pollinator came. And then, but that's next week, so hang on there. Bring on the bees.
Those are funny.
All right, so we got some good music coming up, too. We got our boy Carlos Santana, who we featured
a while ago.
Yep. He's featuring his Corazon album, which features Latin artists, in particular Gloria Estefan, my man Pitbull.
You like Pitbull?
No, but I just like his type.
Gotcha.
Pepper commercials. He looks good enough. So anything sharp, snappy. Who's well?
Yeah.
And Ziggy Marley.
Oh, he'd be fun.
So he's playing tonight at the Verizon Amphitheater. Good show. I would highly recommend catching his small show in Vegas. He plays at the House of Blues about 2 months a year. Phenomenal show there.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if you want to help kids, you can help Make-A-Wish. Did you know that? All you have to do is go drink. So on July 30th, the Kaleidoscope Wines and Wishes are available. $55 a ticket if you're a designated driver. $25.
Okay. Good idea.
And if you think you might be a redneck, then maybe tonight you want to go see Jeff Foxworthy.
Ooh, Red Solo Cup.
Exactly. And the only band I ever told their manager I will never get on a stage with you, Steppenwolf. Steppenwolf.
You won't get on the stage with the manager or with Steppenwolf?
Steppenwolf.
This is a story.
They were a little far gone for me.
I got to hear this.
We preferred Guess Who. That's who I went with.
Okay. But why Steppenwolf? They had some good songs.
John Kay, Get Your Motor Running. They were. You got to understand, in their day when I was with them, like Alice Cooper and all the guys we played with, they weren't so good. They were kind of not so good.
And you told the manager you'll never go on stage with Steppenwolf again because?
Well, I never went on at all.
Because?
I'd heard about their antics and their behavior.
Because?
They were washed up.
Earlier in their career.
Yeah, but now here they're back at the Orange County Fair, so they've had a huge rebound in their career, obviously.
You're ignoring my question, obviously. But
what?
Really? I mean, you just laid it out there. We're not going on stage with Steppenwolf.
Yeah.
Wow. You were on stage with Alice Cooper?
I was. He was pretty good back then.
Yeah, I'll bet.
He apparently crushed Motley Crue. He's touring with the crew right now.
Oh, really?
Got very good reviews. He ends his show by, of course, cutting his head off. It's a classic Alice Cooper move.
What's that, Cyrus?
Motley Crue was the best.
Oh, no, he disagrees, Cyrus.
I saw them.
Did you?
You saw them on Tuesday.
You
Unreal.
Know, the LA Times loved the crew. The Register trashed the crew. I like crew.
All right, Cyrus doesn't buy it. He doesn't buy it.
So he's going to LA Times, not Register.
There you go.
All right.
Is that it?
Nope.
Oh.
You want to see the Doobies? Everybody loves the Doobies. And everybody loves the Doobies. I'm not talking that watered down Michael McDonald Doobies.
I like Michael McDonald Doobie, too.
Tom Johnston, hardcore Doobies with Patrick Simmons. Well, they're playing in Riverside, so they're doing really well, too. They're at the Fox Center out there.
I want to hear some funky Dixieland. Pretty mama, come and take me by the hand.
And if the movie...
By the hand, take me by the hand.
Pretty mama. So if the bad movie wasn't bad enough for you, you can go see the bad musical, Ghost. Okay. Happily, Whoopi Goldberg is nowhere to be seen in this particular production, mm-hmm. I hear. But it's a Tuesday through August 10th at the Performing Arts Center here at Segerstrom.
Nice.
And last but not least, the Pageant of the Masters Jazz on the Green series continues this week with Down to the Bone. And they're at 1 to 3 o'clock, free with a paid admission. It's a nice way to hang out, have a glass of wine, hear a little jazz.
Very nice, Robert. Nice job. I think if people are listening, they got a good sense of what's going on around the county. And you've informed us quite thoroughly, so thank you for that. Hey, camera guys, are we ready to go? We're going to get Jill on this, so I'm going to start this all over again. You're listening to KX90 Old, the phone, everybody. Hold on. What's going on here? Okay, Robert's doing hand signals. Here we go.
She had a protruding zipper. I just tried to make
it. Sorry about that.
Let's not go there.
At least it's a zipper.
You're listening. You're listening to KX.
I got your protruding zipper right
Jill,
here.
Where did
I
that come from? You're listening to KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. I'm Scott Hayes here with my co-host Robert Palmer. And this, of course, is Radio Caravan. And in the studio always is the lovely Miss Jill Harvey, our healthy lifestyle coach.
Yeah.
How are you this morning?
Yeah, I'm great. How are you guys?
Doing great. Well, Robert's good. Doing great.
I can see you're both doing great. Singing, checking zippers. It's great. Yeah.
Pole vaulting.
Pole vaulting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's going on today? You want to talk a little bit about travel and how to stay healthy?
Absolutely.
When you're traveling?
That's hard to do.
It is hard. Most people think it's hard, but we have some tips.
Okay. That's why you're here.
Especially when it comes to traveling by airline. We always think we have to eat their food, drink their water, and we don't have
to. This is opposed to the Mexican death train. Something new for our listeners.
Something new. Okay. So I have my brother-in-law works for a major airline, and we were having a discussion.
Yes.
And it's always, you know, what can you bring through TSA? We can bring a lot through TSA. You can stay home. You can make your own salads, put them in a glass Pyrex or BPA-free plastic container. You can take salads through. If you have salad dressing and you want to mix it in, if you're going to carry it as a liquid form, it has to go in your Ziploc baggie.
Right.
You can make sandwiches. You can wrap them in parchment paper, but not wrap them in foil because they're going to go through the x-ray machine, and they're going to be caught, and then they'll want to look at them, and, you know. And you can take so much. You can bring an empty thermos through and fill it up with hot water on the other side when you get through.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah,
make your own tea or have your own drinks. Yeah. You know, packing healthy almonds, healthy trail mixes, hummus, chopped up vegetables, crackers, popcorn. So, you know, there's no reason to go and
travel. Like, ask to borrow the microwave on the plane.
You what?
Ask to borrow the microwave on the plane.
Yeah, bring a microwave on the plane. But when you guys travel, do you bring your own food?
Or
you
never. I don't. No.
Yeah, but see, now you can.
Megan does.
Megan, you do.
Well, Megan's healthy, and she's an athlete, and I'm not.
Yeah, it all started in college. I was trying to save money because the airport food's really expensive.
Yeah, sure.
I'm just going to bring my lunch with me. And then I realized it's the food on the plane and in the airport salty, and I got swollen and everything. So I just...
So what do you pack?
I'll bring this most recent trip I just did. I brought a salad and a sandwich onto the plane.
There you go.
This is fantastic.
And then I fill up my big water bottle in the airport at you know, one of the restaurants, and I'm set.
And you can also bring empty plastic bags. So if you have something you want to keep cold, get some ice. The restaurants will give you ice to put in and keep it cold. Sometimes those freezer gel packs will get through. Sometimes they won't.
Right.
Some of them have issues with those.
Right.
But when you're traveling on the road, and you're doing road trips, stop at farmers markets. You know, people are always stopping, pulling to In-N-Out and all the fast food. Go to farmers markets. You know, get really innovative. But pack hummus, guacamole, chopped vegetables. It is amazing what you can bring through and stay healthy.
Do you travel this way? When you travel, is this
You know what? I have always packed, like, trail mix, like my own trail mix. Don't buy the bag stuff. It's too many inflammatory oils. Mm-hmm. But I did not know. I really didn't know until I was speaking with my brother-in-law that you can bring food.
These are like oils that say nasty things at the other peanuts and stuff?
Yes.
Stop being so inflammatory.
They're too inflammatory. Okay. But it's really enlightening that we can carry food over, and you can carry your glass container. If you're traveling out of the country, though, and you get to the customs, they may ask you to, you know, dump it, especially if it's fruit or something they're concerned about. So you have to be prepared to let go of food once you get to the other side. And then say you are out of the country, once again, prepare there. They have great farmers markets all over, you know, like especially Italy and stuff, and bring it back through. So, yeah.
Very nice.
So you're on a long road trip, and you're pulling over, and you see to the side of the road a little tomato stand, and next to it is an In-N-Out. You're saying you're going to go to the tomato stand?
Yeah, I personally would. Yeah. Would you go?
She would go, though.
I would.
Yeah, but I would eat healthy. I get my animal style with the extra vegetables on.
No, yeah, I definitely would go for the tomato.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Scott, when you just eat the airline food, is that what you're doing? When
you I try not to eat the airline food, I'll have to be honest. But, yeah, if it's a long flight, I typically would. I wouldn't think of I'll bring a little trail mix or something, but that would be the extent of it.
Yeah, because airline food is just loaded with a bunch of chemicals and preservatives. So now that we know we can do this, let's travel healthy.
Yeah, I love that. Let's travel healthy.
And a ton of salt.
A ton of salt.
Because you can't taste at 30,000 feet, so it's literally prepared very, very differently. If you had a gourmet meal on an airplane, it would taste horrible.
Right.
So they have to cook it differently.
Is that true?
It's very true.
You can't taste at 30,000 feet.
No, it tastes very bland, so there's an excessive amount of salt and other seasonings in airline food, so you can taste it at 33,000.
Where do you get this information from? What's your cite your source on this? I'm curious where that's.
Go look anywhere. I've got 3 million miles on American. I fly a lot. That's what happens.
Really?
It's well known. And the chefs are hired to specially prepare them, and then they fly to altitude and try them.
Wow. And when you travel, then, do you take Jill's advice and sort of pack your own food, or do you eat the airline food?
The only time I take anything is when Nancy flies with me and we have to be in coach. It's a miserable experience to see me in coach. So she tries to recreate the proper experience. So she brings mixed nuts and puts out a little jar of them. She brings a Bloody Mary mix. She brings a little hot towel. That's about it, yeah.
So you're a little high maintenance, huh?
I'm one of
a little bit of a princess, it sounds like.
Yeah,
I'm very proud of my little pony status.
So with the with the taste buds and the food being saltier, enhanced for your taste, you know, alcohol, too. You got to be careful drinking that, right?
Now somebody tells
me. Yeah. I
that's why I'm here, to help out. Yeah.
Hey, nice job, Miss Jill. Thank you so much. And hey, shout out to cameraman Nick, who's working that camera back and forth between Megan and some people. Woo-hoo. Nice job, my friend. And of course, we've got Corey and Cyrus in the room, always the team, Sparkle Film Crew. So guys, always appreciate the hard work. So thank you. Beautiful
thank
job.
You.
Hey, Legends of Rock. Robert, what's going on there? Who we got this week?
Legends of Rock.
Rock.
What's that Bashaw there? That was kind of cool. Today, we're featuring the first two albums and then the fifth album of a once great band. I refer to it as Pre-Suck Chicago.
I saw that in the email. It was funny.
Yes, you know them as the Balladeers of Misery, the Tweeters of Horns, the Singing of Peter Cetera, the Local Castrati, but they used to be a fabulous, phenomenal rock band.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed, they weren't even Chicago. They were the Chicago Transit Authority, previously known as the Big Thing.
I didn't know that.
Yes, indeed. So one day, 1967, Walter Perezader, Terry Kath, Danny Serafine, Jimmy Pankow, Lee Logan, and the ever-lovable Bobby Lamb on keys got together to form a band, playing top 40 hits. They finally figured out they needed a bass player. I don't know why it took them that long to figure that out. So they pulled their little baby boy over. Little Peter Cetera. Jimi Hendrix heard them play once in Chicago and turned to Perezader and he said, "Your horn section sounds like one giant set of lungs, and your guitar player buries me."
Wow.
Terry Kath. So 1968 comes along, they move to LA, they get a new producer, Gutierrez, with Columbia Records, and they name themselves Chicago Transit Authority. Their first album came out in 1969. Chicago Transit Authority, one of the first double albums in history, as a debut album by a band. And they had a number of hits off of it. And this would be Bobby Lamb singing their first one. Does anybody know what time it is?
As I was walking down the street one day, a man came up to me and asked me what the time
was. Danny Serafine was the first drummer in his day to play with headphones on. Most of them were classically trained musicians. Many had musical degrees from college. The level of talent is quite extraordinary. So they follow that up with a very different sounding tune, Beginnings. Listen to Serafini's intro here on the drums. Petey Cetera on the bass.
Petey?
Petey. Here comes the horn section.
Robert on air guitar, air piano, air drums, and air singing.
It's a beautiful song, though, isn't it?
It is. I agree with you.
There's nothing ever been like this ever again. They followed up with questions 67 and 68, a very different sounding tune. Jerry Kaplan on Wild Gun.
Yeah, I like that.
Then listen how beautiful Pete Cetera's voice is when they cut in here. It's great.
You know we have a guest this morning, yes?
Here we go. And then the very, very, very different I'm a Man featuring Terry Kath going wild on his guitar. Of course, starting with Petey Cetera on bass. Musical genius, baby. All right, so they come around to their second album. In the interim, one thing's happened. The actual Chicago Transit Authority has sued them for copyright infringement.
For this next song?
For their first album. Oh, so they changed their name to Chicago.
Gotcha.
That's how they became known as Chicago. They came out with another double LP, very unique. And this is part of a ballad here called The Ballad for the Girl from Buchanan. And Jimmy Pankow was coming home one night on the bus from a tour, listening to classical music, and thought, I shall compose my classical ode. And if you've heard side one of the album, it's seven songs in a row. And this would be Make Me Smile. It's the second song right after introduction. It's literally a symphonic classic. Make Me Smile. Life is lovely. Now, if you're anywhere between the ages of 45 and 60, my guess is that you have slow danced to this song at your prom at some point.
I always liked this song.
Color My World.
Easy one to play on the piano.
It is, and I could play it at a young age. Yeah.
I can even play this song. By the way, you showed some keyboard chops last week.
You bet I did.
Yeah, you were a little gun-shy about performing in here, though. I think we should start a Radio Caravan band.
You got it.
Who plays? One of the camera guys plays drums. I forget which one. Nick? Cyrus? We got drums. We got April come in on singing. You can play keyboards. I can do bass or rhythm. You're ignoring me.
That's what I do best. So back in the day, these guys were literally radicals. They were always urging revolution. Remember, this is the late 60s. Their album, their third album, was an American flag kind of ripped up on fire. Keep it going. And they had a giant poster for signing up, and it was very interesting. So Their next song that they popped out was, of course, 25 or 6 to 4 by Bobby Lamb, and everyone mistakenly thinks this is a drug song.
But it's not.
It actually is not. He woke up in the middle of the night, was trying to write the last verse, and he was so blurry looking at the clock, he couldn't tell whether it was 25 or 26 to 4. So here we go, 25 or 6 to 4.
Waiting for the break of day. Searching for something to say. Flashing lights against the sky. Giving up.
Peter Cetera then wrote a song about the moon landing. He thought it was so extraordinary. He said to himself, where do we go from here? And wrote this beautiful little ballad. Sounds a lot like the band of Leave on Helm, kind of.
A little bit, it does, yeah. Opens up that way.
Take a load off, Mary.
The day just gets a little shorter, don't you think? Take a look around you, and you'll see just what I mean.
Gifted voice. So, Chicago 3 comes out. In my opinion, it's an utter disaster. They have no idea what they're doing. It's all over the map. It's all different styles. It bombed badly. 1971, they released Chicago at Carnegie Hall, Chicago 4, multi-setted box set. For 15 years, the number one box set in the world. Sold so many albums. They redeemed themselves with Chicago 5 and Bobby Lamb's Saturday in the Park. Everybody listen. Now, this next tune is one of my favorites, but very few people know it. It's called Dialogue. It's a song about political things, and it's Terry Kath is a political activist, and Peter Cetera is I Don't Give a Darn college kid. It's a beautiful song, but the words are actually great, too. Loneliness in a Dialogue, Part 1.
After the break, by the way, we have Rick Reif.
It'll be fabulous.
It'll be great.
Are you optimistic about the way that things are going? Do I never, ever think of it?
I remember this song.
Don't you ever worry when you see what's going down? Well, I'm trying to mind my business. That is no business at all.
Robert,
when
amazing
voice.
It is good. All right, let's. What else? Are we near the end of this?
I'll help you get by.
Peter, come in.
I hope this study finds a few more years or so. I also hope to keep my steady high.
Come on, come on. What do we got going here?
Listen to how they built this song. It's different.
You're doing the twist? Okay, after the break, we got Rick Reif coming in, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist.
All right, so just when things were getting really, really good, Terry Kath goes over to his house, his friend's house, one day, his sound man, and he decides to play Russian roulette with a revolver. He did pretty well with that. Thought, well, hell, let's pick up a 9mm, but I better check and make sure the cartridge is okay. There were no bullets in the cartridge. Terry forgot to look in the cylinder.
One in the chamber.
Bye-bye, Terry Kath, very sadly.
Yeah?
January 23, 1978. The band never recovered. They drifted through the 80s, did a bunch of poppy, schmarpy hits. David Foster, very talented, came along, wrote a lot of those for him. But in my opinion, they never, ever recovered. At the end of the day, though, next to the Beach Boys, the largest-selling American band of all time, especially in the 70s, sold more singles than anyone.
Wow.
In the 70s. 40 million units, 23 gold albums, 18 platinums, and 8 multi-platinum, 5 number one albums, and 21 top singles. Ladies and gentlemen, Chicago.
Nice job, Robert. Beautiful. I love the narrative. A round of applause, Jill. Yeah. I love the narrative. The way you build a narrative, you create a story around the bands, the songs, You left out so many other songs you could have included, you know?
That would be post-Suck Chicago.
These I don't know about that. I don't know about that. Hey, we're going to roll into a short musical break, and we got a great guest coming in, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Rick Reif, host, producer, SoCal Insider, PBS SoCal KOCE. We'll be back in about 60 seconds. Megan, roll us out of here. All right. Thank you, Megan. You're listening, of course, to KX93.5 Laguna's Only FM. I'm Scott Hayes here with my co-host, Robert Palmer. And this, of course, is
Yo, Yo, Yo
Radio Caravan. And, of course, Robert's in rare form this morning.
Thank you.
So Robert's always in rare form.
He is always in rare form. And if you don't recognize that voice, by the way. We have in the studio Rick Reif. And I love saying this. Pulitzer Prize winning journalist.
By show of hands, how many people in the room have a Pulitzer Prize?
Uh-huh.
Just one.
Yeah. How many in Laguna have a Pulitzer? I mean, that's a...
Maybe two, but...
Really?
Oh, David Ames has one. Or is that a Tony? He's got a... Do we have a Pulitzer?
David Ames wouldn't have a...
He might.
Really?
I thought it was more like a Tony.
It's a Tony. So we got one Tony and one Pulitzer. It's pretty good.
All right, camera guys, we good with the mics out of the way?
And you know both.
I do indeed. But because I have nothing,
I had zip. Robert, you are much too modest.
Why? Know? Thank you.
And Scott, everybody... now I just met you, but you know this guy. He's a Renaissance man.
Well, that's what he tells me. Yeah,
I mean, high powered lawyer.
Yep.
Musician.
Writer.
Yacker.
Something I can do well.
He's got it all going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think So let me back up here a little bit, because a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist we're going to talk about, host producer of SoCal Insider with Rick Reif on PBS SoCal, executive editor of Orange County Business Journal, associate professor of media sometimes at Chapman University, and co-host now of the News and Public Affairs show Studio SoCal, which we'll talk about in a little bit.
It's a busy guy.
Really busy.
Sounds that way.
It does. It does. And a beautiful, talented wife as well, I might
add. Wow. No kidding.
And you just got back from a vacation to?
Mongolia.
And I'm curious, why Mongolia?
Because Marianne, my wife, and here, this is for you guys, by the way. This is the Mongolian flag, a little gift for each of you.
Thank you.
Get that on camera there. And why Mongolia?
I think you're holding it upside there. There you go. That's the way it goes. No, you got it one more time. And now switch it around. The little flame should be up in the top left corner there. Oh, well, that's okay. Good enough.
Like this.
Bingo.
Okay, see, gotcha.
I can
sorry.
Possibly right. hold my Mongolian.
I wasn't familiar with
interesting country. But the reason I went there is because Marianne, who is an executive with Pacific Life, loves to travel. Uh-huh. And before we got married 6 years ago, she had already been to over 100 countries.
Wow.
So I'm helping her finish up here. So she had not been to Mongolia.
Yeah.
It's not the first place you think of going.
No, it's
not. When you're traveling. Boy, what an experience.
And in what way? What was so different about Mongolia,
It's one of the most remote countries in the world. One of only 22 that has not been invaded by the British Empire. If you look at a map, there's only 22 countries in the whole world that have not been invaded by the British Empire. Mongolia is basically the buffer zone between China and Russia, mm-hmm. and they like it that way. They don't want their borders butting up against each other. So,
mm-hmm.
But Mongolia is where Genghis Khan came from, and the folks there, I mean, he is the rock star. Still 800 years later, he's the rock star in Mongolia.
Hmm. Very interesting. I would say you have a voice and a look
For radio
and television, don't you think?
For radio, you're supposed to.
That was a joke.
No, but don't you think, honestly? I mean, you've been now.
People tell me that.
Yeah, and has it always been that way for you? I mean, have you always sort of had that?
Well, I'm a print guy by training. Mm-hmm. And actually, I got into TV because most print people, no offense, they're not very good on TV. They're great writers, but they don't always have great personalities. Mm-hmm. And I've always been a ham, so I did kind of. I was the go-to guy, you know, when there was a bank crisis and they needed to explain it on television. I'd be the guy that
nobody else could understand how to explain it.
I'm not sure they understood me, but I sounded good.
So you were trained as a print journalist?
Yes.
You went right into writing for newspapers?
Yeah.
And you worked for which newspaper? The Akron?
Well, Akron. Yeah,
Beacon.
No, it's Akron. The Akron Beacon Journal. First paper was in grade school. I did on the old mimeograph machines, which nobody else here.
I'm old enough.
Palmer might remember a mimeograph machine, but this was way, way before. This was like Gutenberg's time.
You used to hang out with him, play stickball,
that's right,
as
yes.
I recall.
Listen, there's been more changes in the media business in my career than there was from Gutenberg until when I started.
Amazing.
I mean, it was. Basically, it just changed the way you move type. But other than that, it was.
When you started newspapers, were they moving little parts around, or were they rolling them out?
Yeah.
On
yeah.
The,
it was
oh yeah, the linotype.
Of the, lead,
the linotype. The pressmen were actually. I've heard it's the first guild, so it goes back to the Middle Ages. And this was like the first group of guys that organized themselves, and they were artists. I mean, the way they could use these machines and the computers just wiped them out overnight. It was done an entire. Profession and way of living.
I had a clerkship at the LA Times. I was 82 or 83, and they were still setting hand type.
Yeah.
And then block the page down and off.
Yeah,
and
I just watched all that, the buyouts, every negotiation. They would get their retirements. And
speaking of which, do you think traditional print newspapers are going to survive?
Most of them won't. And I've been kind of watching, doing a death watch, if you will.
It's sad, isn't it?
It's sad for, you know what, it's sad for people like me, who are in the business, but I don't think it's necessarily sad for society. I think the web has been very empowering, and you don't need as many. You know, when they talk about newsrooms emptying out, a lot of what reporters did was just kind of process information that now is at people's
fingertips.
It came
in over the wire. Yeah.
But what concerns me is the journalistic principles, what's going to happen to them, fairness, accuracy, context. And I don't know how that's going to get worked out. I don't know what kind of value people put on that.
Well, what have you been noticing? Because that's a great question. I mean, you have noticed that when you were probably being raised in the journalistic field as a reporter, you were taught a lot of these things probably, or you learned them by trade. I don't know what your path was that through right. that. But these days, everybody can go online and start producing and writing copy and content. And a lot of those sort of ethics have gone away.
We've gone from Edward R. Murrow to Howard Stern. I mean, it's a completely
in a sense, that's true,
well,
yeah.
There's people but like still- Howard Stern, you know? I mean, I think that it works. One of the way it works out, though, is that with the profusion of information, people kind of sort it out.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a little different process. You start determining yourself whether this person has an axe to grind. And it's more, it almost gets back to the beginnings of this country when, there was no such thing as an objective journalist. Everybody right. was an advocate. And, and so the idea was if you had all these opposing views, the truth would come out.
So when you started in this field, did you want to be an investigative reporter? Is that what you were like?
Yes. I got into it a little before the Watergate thing. So it's not like Woodward and Bernstein drove me to the profession right. like, so many journalists. But, I always wanted to. I actually probably wanted to be more of a storyteller. I just loved, as I said, my first paper was in grade school, and then mm-hmm. I was the editor of the high school paper mm-hmm. and managing editor of the college paper, and I've always just enjoyed writing.
Do you have strong writing skills? Do you consider yourself a strong writer in that sense?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I mean, not with, much more than I do a TV person.
Right.
Even though I've been doing it for a long time now. I when I would finish my column at the Business Journal, I always felt like I nailed it. Always felt yeah. good when I was done with a column. I
really?
Never felt good when I was done with a TV show. Never.
Really?
Oh, no.
Why is
oh,
that?
God, I didn't go there. The person said this. Why did we talk about that?
Was that a tough
creature?
Was yeah. that
is it the ability to rewrite the written word? You can just
yes.
get it to
Yeah, you get
perfect.
To say it. Yeah. You get to put it exactly the way you think. And TV's not like that, nor is radio.
You notice.
It kind of goes, you kind of ride. You're riding a horse, but you don't know where the horse is going.
Exactly.
But there's some excitement to that. When you made that transition then from print.
Maybe it's excitement for you. It's agony for me.
Is it? Why? Because you're
such
a
print guy. It's just my mindset. I'm just a print guy, and I want it. And so that's my issue.
Yeah. When you made the transition then from print to TV, I mean, uh-huh. is that sort yes. of how that transition, was that a natural transition for you?
No. I thought it would be, but
yeah.
There's things you have to learn. I was always a talking head on TV, and that was easy, like I'm doing here today. But mm-hmm. when you're actually hosting the show, as you guys know, mm-hmm. it's a little different.
You're just going David Byrne on me today, yeah. is that yeah. what you're doing? Okay.
So tell us a little bit about your show, but you're making a transition from
yes.
shows, it seems like.
Yeah, new show coming up.
And here's the thing. I mean, we're going to edit this down and air it, as I mentioned before. So let's not even mention that it's a new show, although for the radio audience, they know it's a new show.
Uh-huh.
But talk to us about the show that you're working on.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's called Studio SoCal.
Okay.
And let me explain it by first talking about the show that I have just wrapped up
yeah.
Doing the last episode, SoCal Insider, and I've been doing that for 10 years on PBS.
Right.
And it started as Inside OC, because just as you guys are serving a Laguna market here, I saw that Orange County was very underrepresented in the news business
mm-hmm.
As being part of the LA market. And so, wow, let's say here we have a PBS station in Orange County. I'll do a show on Orange County.
Your idea.
But then, as you know, about 3 years ago, the way I explained it, we were the Clippers. We woke up one morning, found out the Lakers had left town.
Mm-hmm.
PBS franchise yep. in Los Angeles left PBS, and so we inherited the franchise and became the number one PBS franchise in the LA market. So I said, well, you know what? The show's been Orange County, but now we're Southern California. So I changed it to SoCal Insider. Okay. And now this new show is really a continuing evolution there because, while the show, and David Nazar, I should plug David Nazar, my reporter, producer, it's basically been a two-man operation. We've mm-hmm. won the Golden Mike for Best Public Affairs Show the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
But
Congrats.
We're still in, you know, it's still got a bit of an Orange County feel, and so now this is going to be more L.A. So my co-host is Elizabeth Espinoza, who's a TV and radio journalist in L.A., and so she's going to be coming on board. So she'll have bring more of the L.A. feel. I'm the, you know, white guy from Orange County. And, you know, so that's, you know, it's going
to
be a much.
To be clear, you're no Donald Sterling, though.
It's let's hope not. although it could be good for ratings. I don't know. But so it's really we're really going to ramp it up. And we're also moving. I'm moving from behind a desk, and we're going to be on a couch.
Are you really?
Or a sofa. Maybe.
So you're going to have to start
a nice couch.
Wearing pants
sofa.
Now?
It's going to be a nice sofa.
Pants now with the show?
Yes, yeah, I'm going to have to put some pants on, yeah.
And so how is the dynamics of the show going to change as a result of having now a co-host sitting now on a sofa, and are you still going to tackle sort of the same issues, or is
yes.
it going to be a different...
Yeah. No, we'll still tackle the same issues, but I think it's going to be a little more of a chatty type of environment, a little more laid back, and...
Which is sort of what we try to do in here. We sort of have a chatty, laid-back environment. How do you think that will help you in terms of a journalist?
I don't know if it will help me in terms of a journalist.
Will
I think I think it'll be more. The whole idea is to be more compelling for viewers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Lots of cutaways to people in the streets and reporters.
Yes. Yes.
Lots of feeds. Okay.
Yeah.
That's good.
Same time. All of that. Nothing's going to change.
Right now.
Yeah.
Right now.
Are you excited?
Yes, I am.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
And how do you? What's the dynamics like between you and your co-host? Have you had that opportunity?
We have. Elizabeth and I have had dinner together, and we just cut some promo spots. And I actually got her sick. She came down with Mongolian flu.
Nice.
Which
nice.
Is always
really.
I should say a Mongolian cold. Yes, I was fighting a cold from the trip.
And, what are the symptoms? Do you yak
well,
a lot?
It may. yes. Actually, it may have just been one of those things you get after an international flight. But anyways, yeah. But she came down
you
with it, so I was listening to her
because no
she
reason.
Does a radio show on KFI every day. Before
oh, really?
John and Ken, she's with Mark Thompson. It's Thompson and Espinoza.
Oh,
and,
okay. I know that show.
And I could hear her getting progressively sick. I texted her, and you know, she said,
I'm sorry, thank you very much.
I'm getting sick. So she's probably in bed right now.
Could I hear the story behind your Pulitzer, what it was about, and what it was like to get?
Sure.
That's the highest award you can get.
Yeah, the award, I should be clear, it went to the Akron Beacon Journal. I was the lead reporter, and it was for general news reporting in 1987 for our coverage of the Jimmy Goldsmith Goodyear takeover battle.
Ah.
And in Akron, Ohio, Goodyear was, you know, was,
that was
the tire, it's, you know, the rubber city, and Goodyear... was the company in the company town. It came under attack, and this was when this was the first wave of hostile takeovers. Now everybody's used to this kind of thing, but that was the first year of the wave of hostile takeovers. Wow. And Michael Milken, the junk bond king, and Ivan Greed is Good, Boesky, and all that. And so, you know, it was rather unusual. Usually, the general news reporting award goes to a paper for a Challenger explosion, a flood, you know, some
right.
big deal like that. And we want it for a business story, you know, a takeover.
And a lot of in-depth reporting, I'm sure, and behind the scenes. And
yeah.
When you got news that you had won a Pulitzer, where were you and how that
We were in the newsroom, and it's just like winning the World Series. There's, honest to gosh, there's champagne, you know, boxes. But the thing is, you're never absolutely sure until it's announced. And it's announced, even then, it was announced online, on the computer.
Wow.
You know, you just keep updating the site to see if the news was announced. But word leaks out. So about a week before, word leaked out that, hey, you guys should get ready to celebrate. But you're never sure because there's been some horror stories about papers that thought they'd won and they planned celebrations and then they didn't.
So. I got to imagine.
Kind of like Dewey celebrating. Yeah. Truman? Who's Truman? I won. I'm Dewey.
Yeah, that's right.
This is a naive question, but I love naive questions. And that is, you know, I imagine
there's
that
no such thing as a naive question.
I know. When you win an Oscar, you get that nice statue and you get to put it on your mantle.
Right.
When you win a Pulitzer, what do you get?
I get a copy of the Pulitzer Prize.
And what's that look
like? The original's hanging up in Akron, Ohio.
Yeah.
And it just says, you know, the Columbia School of Journalism hereby certifies whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And so.
Beautiful. So congratulations on that, by the way.
Well, thank you. That's huge. It happened many, many years ago.
Yeah.
And how about the golden mics? How many of those do you have?
Four.
Wow.
I think I got four or five.
You want to explain what the golden
mic? Oh, that's given every year for the best something or another in broadcast journalism, radio, TV.
Yeah. Who awards that one?
That's the Radio and TV News Association of L.A. I think it's RTNA.
Which I looked up, by the way, and they have a lot of categories for awards. I'm thinking, you know what, we'll enter next year.
We're in.
Deadline's in October.
I'm
yeah,
sure.
We could.
I'm
There's
sure
a radio category, isn't there? Something like that.
Yeah, go ahead, enter. You won't be competing with me.
Most inane, goofy radio show ever created.
Yeah, I think they have that category. Yeah.
Multiply it by our listener base. And we're shoo-in, I think.
Yeah, listen, in your weight category, you guys have a shot.
Punch above class, huh?
You guys got a good show. You guys got you've been doing it 4 or 5 months now.
Yeah,
right?
I think we've got it down.
You're already scraping the bottom of the barrel on guests, though.
That's not at all. By the way,
you're our first Pulitzer Prize winner.
So what sort of influence would you say your show, your politics, your journalism career, what sort of influence would you say you've had, and don't be humble on me here, has had on the county?
Well, you know, in general terms, it's true. You know, journalists never like to say, oh, we have influence, you know, we're just informing people. But the truth is, we do. And I often joke that, and Robert, you can identify with this, I always use the example of the, you know, high-powered patent lawyer. You know, you can have an attorney who's making $400,000, $500,000 a year, and his or her influence is nothing compared to that reporter who's making $50,000 a
year. Right, agreed.
It's just by the nature of what a journalist does that they, you know, they influence a community. So I don't know. I've always focused on the end user, who's watching me, who's reading me, and I think that's served me well. I think a lot of journalists don't do that. They're more writing for each other and not really thinking about the people they should be serving.
You're
and to understand the influence, Scott, just to business people in Orange County, I mean, you've got Rick Reif, you've got Jimmy Sullivan, currently editing, and you got my friend Richard Reisman. Those are the trilogy of the Orange County Business Journal. And if you're a business person in Orange County, you cannot underestimate the value. It's the New York Times, it's the Wall Street Journal, it's Fortune, it's Forbes, all in one. It is the singular voice that addresses the business community of Orange County. Mm. It's pretty miraculous the power you do have.
Yeah.
Thank you. Can I quote you on that?
You can indeed.
Yeah.
I used to be the theater critic, but we finally figured out why are we having theater reviews in a business journal.
We're down to about 2 minutes, Megan, 2 or 3 minutes. I'm going to kind of do a quick round of questions here, if you don't mind. Who have you not interviewed in Orange County that you would love to get on your show?
Donald Brenn.
He's very
who's, of
private.
Course, the owner
private.
Of the Irvine Company.
Yeah.
I have interviewed him years ago at the Business Journal. I'm thinking, though, as far as a TV show, the guy I'd love to have is Schwarzenegger. I'd like to have Schwarzenegger.
Yeah. Get down.
And I'm still hoping to get Jerry Brown. I think I'll do that. But the governor is not very accessible. But, I guess those are...
Do you reach out personally to try to get those interviews into your show?
Yeah. No, I haven't tried Schwarzenegger.
Has Mr. Brent ever done a public interview? I've been interviewed by him, but
I don't
I've never
believe
seen
he has ever done a TV interview.
Yeah.
Interesting thing.
He has done some on rare occasions.
As sharp as a tack, looks great. Yeah. He's an Olympic quality skier. He's an amazing guy, but I've never seen him.
Yeah.
Interview.
Yeah, I've interviewed him a couple of times, caught him once at an event, and he talked for about 5 minutes, and once we had a prearranged interview with him. So, he's done, on occasion, very rarely, he'll do an interview, but
we got
nothing
one,
on TV.
We got 1 minute. You know what we should do, Robert, by the way? We should compete.
Yes, sir.
To see who can get to him first. I think that would be an interesting contest.
You might have a good shot. You know?
Hey, we got 1 minute, very quickly. What makes a great journalist?
Empathy... inquisitiveness and a desire for accuracy and fairness.
Beautiful. One last question. I worded this very carefully. You're a baseball fan, I read, yes? Specifically
Huge.
The Chicago White Sox?
And the Cleveland Indians and I like to say Anaheim Angels.
How does the game of baseball influence you as a journalist, or does it?
Oh, yes. Oh, analogies. Wonderful analogies in baseball, and more. It's just the context for my whole life. Whenever I see a year, 1960 Bill Mazeroski home run. I mean, that's it's kind of the life of the mind. You know, baseball is a context for everything.
Yeah.
although lately I've been going more to golf, but that's probably a sign of senility.
All right, we're done. You know, that just went way too short. We needed a whole nother half hour or so in here. Yeah.
Too bad I took up so much time.
I didn't want to say anything.
Stupid music show. Me stink eye over
Rick,
there.
Thank you. Go fast. You guys are good.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming in. Really appreciate that. It was
keep up the good work.
Rick, it was a real pleasure. Your local gym and your bride is just absolutely wonderful. She's over there.
Well, she's
life,
the better and, half for sure.
Very involved in the community, and they do a lot of really great things. So thanks for all you do. We really appreciate it.
And same to you. Thanks.
You've been listening to KIX 93.5 Laguna's Only FM. I'm Scott Hayes. On behalf of myself and my co-host Robert Palmer, this is Radio Caravan. Robert?
Hey, it's Saturday. Where better to go right now? Let's go to the park, shall we?
There you go.
Have a great day.
You've been listening to Radio Caravan with Scott Hayes and Robert Palmer and reporter Megan Jamerson.